towards the bottom of 108. As Hermes spoke, he pulled the herb out of the ground and showed me what it was like. The root was black, while the flower was as white as milk. The gods call it Molly, and mortal men cannot uproot it, but the gods can do whatever they like. Then Hermes went back to high Mount Olympus, passing over the wooded island. But I fared onward towards the house of Circe, and my heart was clouded with care as I walked along. Do you know what it means, clouded with care? It means he's worried. Again, we're showing a little bit of maturity, right? Because if you're super arrogant, you're not really worried about anything. So this is probably a good step. Odysseus continues, when I got to the gates, I stood there and called the goddess Circe. And as soon as she heard me, she came down, opened the door, and asked me to come in. So I followed her, much troubled in my mind. She set me on a richly decorated seat inlaid with silver. There was a footstool also under my feet. And she mixed something in a golden goblet for me to drink. But she drugged it, for she meant me mischief. When she had given it to me, and I had drunk it without its charming me, she struck me with her wand. There now, she cried, top of 109, be off to the pigsty and make your lair with the rest of them. But I, remember part two here, but I rushed at her with my sword, drawn as though I would kill her, whereon she fell with a loud scream, clasped my knees, and spoke piteously, saying, who and whence are you? From what place and people have you come? How can it be that my drugs have no power to charm you? Never yet was any man able to stand so much as a taste of the herb I gave you. You must be spell-proof. Surely you can be none other than the bold hero Odysseus, who Hermes always said would come here someday with his ship while on his way home from Troy. So be it then. Sheathe your sword and let us go to bed, that we may make friends and learn to trust each other. That's another word for cuddling, right? They're going to make friends. Okay. Oh, ho. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And I answered, Circe, how can you expect me to be friendly with you when you have just been turning all my men into pigs? He remembers the last step of the plan, right? Don't just go right to bed with her. She has to make some promises. And now that you have gotten me here by myself, you mean me mischief when you ask me to go to bed with you. You will unman me and make me fit for nothing. I shall certainly not consent to go to bed with you unless you will first take your solemn oath to plot no further harm against me. So she swore at once as I had told her, and when she had completed her oath, then I went to bed with her. Remember, who's back home waiting for him? Weaving every day?
Penelope.
Penelope. So what does this tell us that the ancient Greeks thought of Odysseus's marriage vows? Yeah, very loose. Not, they didn't think too highly of that. It's not a good thing, right? Surely the rest of us are sitting here saying that's not a good thing. Meanwhile, her four servants, who are her housemaids, set about their work. They are the children of the groves and fountains, and of the holy waters that run down into the sea. One of them spread a fair purple cloth over a seat, and laid a carpet underneath it. Another brought tables of silver up to the seats, and set them with baskets of gold. A third mixed some sweet wine with water in a silver bowl and put golden cups upon the tables, while the fourth brought in water and set it to boil in a large cauldron over a good fire which she had lighted. When the water in the cauldron was boiling, she poured cold into it till it was just as I liked it, and then she set me in a bath and began washing me from the cauldron about my head and shoulders to take the tire and stiffness out of my limbs. As soon as she had done washing me and anointing me with oil, she arrayed me in a good cloak and shirt and led me to a richly decorated seat inlaid with silver. There was a footstool also under my feet. A maidservant then brought me water in a beautiful golden ewer and poured it into a silver basin for me to wash my hands, and she drew a clean table beside me. An upper servant brought me bread and offered me many things of what there was in the house. And then Circe bade me eat, but I would not, and sat without heeding what was before me, still moody and suspicious. So what we know here is that Circe's house is really fancy, okay? It's a very fancy house filled with very nice things, and they have the best when it comes to food and wine. So now Circe is very happy with him still from that little attempt with the sword. She's very turned on still, and she wants to treat him very well with food and wine. And Odysseus won't eat, and he won't drink. He's still suspicious. What, has he not had her promise yet?
That she won't drug him.
Yeah, what about his men? The men are still in the pigsties. So when we're back to the thumbs up, thumbs down on Odysseus' leadership, thumbs up, because he could just drink a bunch of wine and eat a bunch of food and do a bunch of cuddling, and who cares about the men? But he does care about them. Bottom of 109. When Circe saw me sitting there without eating and in great grief, she came to me and said, Odysseus, why do you sit like that, as though you were dumb, gnawing at your own heart and refusing both meat and drink? Is it that you are still suspicious? You ought not to be, for I have already sworn solemnly that I will not hurt you. And I said, Circe, no man with any sense of what is right can think either of eating or drinking in your house until you have set his friends free and let him see them. If you want me to eat and drink, you must free my men and bring them to me that I may see them with my own eyes. When I had said this, she went straight through the court with her wand in her hand and opened the pigsty doors. My men came out like so many prime hogs and stood looking at her. But she went about among them and anointed each with a second drug, whereon the bristles that the bad drug had given them fell off, and they became men again, younger than they were before, and much taller and better looking. So not only did she turn them back to men, but she improved their looks and made them younger. What does this tell us that the ancient Greeks valued? Height, but less specifically, youth and beauty, right? So to make it up to him, she makes them younger and better looking and taller. The men knew me at once, seized me, each of them by the hand, and wept for joy, till the whole house was filled with the sound of their hullabalooing. And Circe herself was so sorry for them that she came up to me and said, Odysseus, noble son of Laertes, go back at once to the sea where you have left your ship, and first draw it onto the land. Then hide all your ship's gear and property in some cave, and come back here with your men. I agreed to this, so I went back to the seashore, and found the men at the ship weeping and wailing most piteously. When they saw me, the silly blubbering fellows began frisking round me as calves break out and gambol round their mothers, when they see them coming home to be milked, after they have been feeding all day, and the homestead resounds with their lowing. They seemed as glad to see me as though they had gotten back to their own rugged Ithaca, where they had been born and bred. Sir, said the affectionate creatures, we are as glad to see you back as though we had gotten safely home to Ithaca. But tell us all about the fate of our comrades. I spoke comfortingly to them, and said we must draw our ship onto the land, and hide the ship's gear with all our property in some cave. Then come with me, all of you, as fast as you can to Circe's house, where you will find your comrades eating and drinking in the midst of great abundance. On this, the men would have come with me at once, but Eurylochus, remind me, who's Eurylochus?
He's like the leader.
That's right. Remember, we split the men in half. Eurylochus was captain of the half who had been pigs, and he was the one that said, don't make me go with you, I'm too afraid. But Eurylochus tried to hold the men back and said, alas, poor wretches that we are, what will become of us? Rush not on your ruin by going to the house of Circe, who will turn us all into pigs or wolves or lions, and we shall have to keep guard over her house. Remember how the Cyclops treated us when our comrades went inside his cave, and Odysseus with them? It was all through his sheer folly that those men lost their lives. So Eurylochus doesn't trust him. Eurylochus says, it's too good to be true. Don't follow him, or bad things will happen. Odysseus says, when I heard him, bottom of page 110, I was in two minds whether or not to draw the keen blade that hung by my sturdy thigh and cut his head off in spite of his being a near relation of my own. But the men interceded for him. Being of two minds means he can't decide what he's going to do. Let him live or kill him right there. He's pretty mad at Eurylochus. But the men step in, and the men say, sir, if it may so be, let this fellow stay here and mind our ship, but take the rest of us with you to Circe's house. On this we all went inland, and Eurylochus was not left behind after all, but came on too, for he was frightened by the severe reprimand that I had given him. Meanwhile, Circe had been seeing that the men who had been left behind were washed and anointed with olive oil, and she had also given them woolen cloaks and shirts, and when we came we found them all comfortably at dinner in her house. As soon as the men saw each other face to face and knew one another, they wept for joy and cried aloud till the whole palace rang again. Thereon Circe came up to me and said, Odysseus, noble son of Laertes, tell your men to leave off crying. I know how much you have all of you suffered at sea, and how ill you have fared among cruel savages on the mainland. But that is over now, So stay here, and eat and drink till you are once more as strong and hearty as you were when you left Ithaca. For at present you are weakened, both in body and mind. You keep all the time thinking of the hardships you have suffered during your travels, so that you have no more cheerfulness left in you. That good Greek hospitality, right?